Good evening, Mavs fans. Welcome to Pod Maverick After Dark. I am Kirk Henderson, editor-in-chief over at Mavs Moneyball. Tonight, I am joined by two of our draft aficionados. We have Tyler Edsall and Jack Nowicki. How are you doing, boys?
If I speak, I will be in big trouble.
And that's what we're here for. We're here for instant draft reactions based off of something. Everything we say here may come to haunt us nearly immediately. I just walked up the stairs mad that the Mavericks draft traded away pick number 30, only to sit down, turn on the podcast, and figure out that they have actually pulled someone else in, a Spanish basketball player that Tyler is big into. But here's what we're going to do here. Brian may join us. Josh Bowe may join us. Anybody else in the Mavs Moneyball staff may join us. We'll see if that actually happens. We're going to kind of break this down into kind of two distinct sections, largely because I think it would behoove us to talk about the first pick that the Mavericks made with number 9 and then see if more information is coming in with pick 30. And Matt Martinez noting Tyler's cry-on in the background. It's very, very funny. It's good stuff. All right, so with the 9th pick in the draft, so let's just sort of set the stage here. All of the chuckle fucks that mumbled about draft picks moving, and I'm talking about not us, because we don't do this for work. We get on the internet, we read stuff. I talk to people, but I try not to talk to people about the draft because I just think it's a big shit show. Everybody lies. Where we heard for, you know, days and days, starting probably Friday, that there was going to be a lot of movement, potentially a lot of movement. Guess how much movement there was, guys? Very fucking little. Picks 1 through 8 went nearly chalk as chalk can be.
Perfectly chalk.
Exactly chalk.
Yeah, yeah, like almost everything going back to lottery night. Whereas like you kind of felt that with the Clippers picking at number 5, they were going to get one of the big guards. We felt confident in that, settled in on who that was going to be in Wagler. That was like the first pain point. The Nets ended up selecting Mikael Brown Jr., much to my eternal lament. And then it went, 7, and who went 7? Acuff went 7 to the Kings, the most Kings player in the history of space and time. And then the Hawks were sort of a late riser for Kingston Fleming. San Antonio local product, went to the University of Houston. We all liked him a lot. But boy, howdy, did he look small up on that stage. He was wearing that suit. Like, he looked like a child swimming in that draft suit. Maybe it was the color. I don't know. Maybe I'll probably rue the day because I think he's quite good at basketball. Which then left the Mavericks at 9. And, Jake Fisher is a friend of mine, but I think pick tippers should be put to death. I hate pick tippers. Let me enjoy the draft in peace. I don't want to click Twitter. So by that point in the draft, he had essentially given up pick tipping. And so when the pick came in that the Mavericks were picking Morez Johnson Jr., was he a freshman in Michigan?
Redshirt freshman.
Okay, second year though, that's fine.
Second year.
It's a University of Michigan, big man, and we mean big man at number 9. My immediate reaction was holy shit. My second reaction was they're taking this for Oklahoma City, and then it became clear within about 5 minutes that he was actually the Dallas Mavericks draft pick. So I'm going to punt to Tyler first because Tyler was probably the most like, what the fuck? Because we wrote roughly 30 draft profiles at Mavs Moneyball. Guess who wasn't one of them? Morez Johnson Jr. Tyler, what do you think?
I'll be honest. I mean, you can explain it in a way to me where you could paint the picture where it's an A-grade pick. I don't see it. I value different things in the game of basketball.
Sure.
But I mean, Morez is going to be, I don't see a world where he's a bad NBA player per se. Like, he is like the epitome. And you heard Dusty talk about it a lot in kind of interviews. I know he was on with KOC talking about Morez. You know, I think the standout quote was, you know, he'd go into some game plannings and it was, we have Rez and they don't. And I think that goes a lot to show what Morez is truly about. He is a glue guy that happens to be 6'9", 250 pounds, and an absolute athletic freak. Now you can get into whether that's good value at pick 9 when this is the best asset you're going to have in the flag era, but I'm going to try not to be too terribly negative about it because I do think Morez is going to be a good NBA player. And I do not think that this had much to do with Dusty May as much as the optics would make it say, because Merez is such a Masai Ujiri player, big, rangy kind of forward who's able to be really switchable defensively with a questionable jumper. I mean, it fits him to a T.
So Robbie Lewis in the chat, longtime listener, regular here in the chat, says, if Dusty May wasn't our coach, would he be our pick? And so Merez kind of – exactly, Jack. So. Merez was
asked – He's a Masai player.
But I also think this early in the draft, I have to think he is also a Schmitz guy too. You know, Schmitz is not going to – but at nine – like, we all kind of knew this. Nine was a pain point for all. I mean, we watched all of our drafts and everything. We're just like starting 5, 6, and 9 was where things had the potential to get weird. We all thought that Burries was going to be the pick. The betting boards all thought that Burries was going to be the pick, particularly by around pick 6. Like, I think the odds, like Tyler can probably speak more to that, but it was pretty crazy to watch in that regard. And then to see them go here means, and this is important to me because I have talked about this a long time. This was the last lottery pick the Mavericks are going to have. It just, it is. Even next year, unless they like somehow with the lottery odds get the first or second pick from the Hornets, it's not happening. So they have to truly believe in this pick. And so I'm a little skittish on it at the moment. I'm not like negative about it because number one, 6'9" guy without shoes, 250 pounds, 12 plus points, 10 plus rebounds, 2 plus blocks. This is a large man. And you know, Josh had a tweet where he's like, somebody explained to me how the offense is going to work. You know, 3 yards in a cloud of dust basketball. We might be looking at that again, but I'm kind of enthused about the pick in a vacuum. I need to see how the rest of the team is getting built. Friend of the show, former Mavs Moneyball staffer, SJ, and I were debating about this because I'm just like, I don't see the vision right now. But I, Jack, you tell me your reaction to this pick because I think you're going to drive our Slack off the edge because you have a tendency to tweet, like share messages like you're dying. Tell me what you think.
So overall, I mean, worst case scenario happened where all the guards go 5 through 8. Mm. And that was just kind of like if all those guys went and there wasn't a trade down. And I mean, there might have been a trade down, might not. Who knows? Then there wasn't really going to be an amazing option. It was going to be like Burries or a wing. And I liked Burries fine enough. He's okay, but, you know, he's fine. I thought, obviously, they were going to go Nate Amon. I thought that there was a ton of smoke going there. It felt like that was kind of a Mike Schmitz, Masai type of guy. But obviously, they go Merez, and you know, it's exactly what Masai wants in a player. Like, he's big for his position, great defensively, uber versatile on the defensive end, athletic as hell, and he can't really shoot. I mean, it's Scotty Barnes, it's Colin Murray-Boyles, like that's kind of what he is. And I'm not going to compare him to CMB, Colin Murray-Boyles, because I mean he was great last year. But that's kind of, I think, going to be the vision, is that like kind of 4-5 hybrid, small ball 5 type of player. So I'm fine with it. They're going to have to show me something with trades this summer, because right now this roster makes absolutely no sense.
I will say, and the one thing, Merez's playmaking is not on this.
Yeah, that's the thing. He's not.
His playmaking stinks.
I wouldn't say it stinks, but it's not like good. It's just like, it's not a real factor for
him. It's non-existent.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we're now joined by Brian Roby, who I think his immediate reaction was like a series of ... in our Slack where he's just like, what is happening? So what we're going to do, Brian, is we're going to kind of talk about this stuff in order, going with Merez Johnson first and then kind of circle back to what happened late, because I didn't even realize that Sergio was drafted by the Mavericks until after the show had started. Really just top notch editorial work by me here. Brian, what did you think about the pick?
Once all of the guards were gone, I had a feeling something stupid was about to happen, so I just hope that it wouldn't be the worst case scenario and be Nate Amendt. It wasn't Nate, so I told myself I could live with whatever happened beyond that. The next obvious pick to me would have been Braden Burries. And, like, I don't care that he got over mocked to Dallas, like, over the last month and a half, which, it, frankly, just, like, the entire draft community should be ashamed for the way that they carried Waddle Foote, a lot of the shit.
I want to circle back to this. I'm really good. I love that you said that.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of you. I can curse, right? It's like 10:50. Yeah. 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 A lot of you motherfuckers should be ashamed of yourself, man. Genuinely.
No, you want to? You want to? I just gotta slip this knife in because some of these people are that do this draft stuff are so excited to get to talk to somebody important. That's why they carry the water. They can't help it. This is why I don't like talking to people.
Rich Paul can't be that like cool, bro. Like, damn. Like, I saw Rich Paul consoling Braden Burries when they were like on the clock when Merez went, and he was like talking to Burries like about why he didn't get drafted. I'm like, what?
Yeah. Like, no.
But go ahead.
Brian. Okay, keep going, Brian. Sorry.
It's fine. That's what I would have done probably the next right in that next group of guys, somewhere between like 9 and 12 on like a mass specific board was Merez. I would have had him like right there in that mix. So I'm not mad at taking Merez at 9. I don't think it was great value to take him there, even though you had all the teams who are allegedly beating down the door trying to trade up to get to that spot to take him. Right. That's the word. Is that people really wanted to get to like 10 to 9 to try and take it.
Depending on how you value that source, yeah.
Yeah. That's ultimately right. The issue, right? It feels like that the teams that were trade backs absolutely wanted him. So if you're looking to trade back, you're not getting him.
Yeah. Me personally, I would have been fine with a trade back where we just get Filon or Okori or maybe even Burries if he falls. I doubt it because he went the very next pick to Milwaukee, but
yeah.
Getting Merez at 9 is fine. It's not good. It's not great. It's definitely not bad. It was fine, especially given that we still had vets to move who are in front of Merez still, you know, in the rotation. And that not like that, nothing happening there to that point made me wonder, okay, so they're definitely going to move at least one of them like tonight, right now, right? One of PJ. Or Gafford, one of the guys who plays the two positions he's going to be spending a lot of time at, one of those guys is definitely going to go, right?
Well, that's I want to put this thought in the universe and then circle back to it after we talk about everything. But like, I need us, you, me, Josh, everyone, our fan base, get ready to learn Masai Ujiri trade bullshit. You need to learn it, process it, learn to love it. Because we've come from a trade deadline where the Mavericks made moves for 8 straight years. I think we might be entering a period of time where the Mavericks talk a lot and make no moves. I'm very genuinely concerned about that because Masai, after 2019, I don't think he made a trade that I liked, period. Now, I know there's a lot of people out there that like some of the things that the Raptors have done. The Raptors are unwatchable dog shit basketball. Sorry, they are. And winning 40 games in the Eastern Conference is you know, it's like it's the meme of the guy biting on the metal, and then it's like it's their 10th. That's what Eastern Conference basketball is. Full stop. All right, Josh, what was your take? You're probably my favorite one since you didn't know who he was until tonight.
I didn't. That's why like when I sent that tweet, I was like, I'm sure someone's going to get mad at me thinking that I'm trying to piss in their cereal bowl. But I was generally asking because I don't know. I don't watch these guys like you guys do. This is probably the least amount of college basketball I've watched in the last 18 months, like in my life. I used to watch, you know, as much as I could, but I just don't as much anymore. So I just had to, you know, pull up the YouTube highlight clips. And the first thing I realized, like, he's so big, Merez. Like, in my head, I thought he was like a Cooper Flag type wing, like a swing 3-4. But he's absolutely legitimately 4-5. He's a big dude. And I like getting big athletic guys. Like, that's fine. It's a very Masai pick, obviously, if you look at like his last like 8 draft first round draft picks. Like, I kind of knew they were never taking a guard at 9. It just never felt like if you look at Masai's track record as a drafter, he just values that 6'7 to 6'10 forward wing that has potential for some versatility. Merez might be a little bit more challenged, I think, offensively compared to some of the other guys he's picked in the past. But the main thing is, I mean, I can't get mad at them for taking a guy with that much athletic upside and defensive upside with next to Cooper. The thing is obviously like the roster has to be figured out because I genuinely don't know how you make and this isn't even talking about the vets, like I don't even think about Gafford, PJ, Clay, not like even if they don't trade those guys will not be on the next great Mavericks team because they will simply go away. Like they will expire their contract. Even if they don't trade them, they will not re-sign them. Like by the time Cooper is 25, those guys won't be anywhere close to the roster, regardless of whether they trade him now or later. But I do think about Lively because he is your former, you know, top 10 pick, top 12, 21, 22 year old starting center. And presumably he's going to be around the next great Cooper flag team. So it's like, I'm just trying to envision how does Cooper, Merez, Lively front court at the 3-4-5. Like after what I just watched in the NBA finals, I don't know where that works. Like we just watched one of the best defensive players I've seen in years, Victor Wembanyama, his defense kind of get not neutralized. Like he was still great, but the key is the Knicks spread the Spurs out and made Wimby chase shooters all over the floor and moved guys around and had versatile shooting wings and a shooting center. That's how they got around it, along with, you know, Jalen Brunson being awesome. So when you watch a team win the championship like that, seeing then the team that you cover go all in on, you know, size, no shooting, just size and defense, which is kind of funny because it's like we just got through with the Nico defense wins championships going and all in bully ball. And now it looks like they're going right back to that. But again, who knows what the roster is going to look like. Derek Lively might not be a part of this thing if his injuries keep happening. So maybe that's part of it too. But also, so there's that part of it, which I'm just like, I don't see how it works, but I'm not going to shit on it because I don't know how good these guys. Right, I don't know how good these guys can be. I don't know what the roster is going to look like in training camp. But then the other part of it is we've had 8 different NBA champions in a row. So I don't think what the Knicks did necessarily, like everyone, when a team wins a title, it's like, oh, that's the next blueprint. And then another team wins the next year.
Yeah.
Like obviously there are through lines on some of this stuff, but like, who knows? Maybe the Mavericks can win a championship in 5 years by just beating everyone's ass with a bunch of 6'9", 6'10 athletic dudes that can play defense. I don't know. I mean, you're still going to need some shooting somewhere. They're going to have to find that eventually. But I want to wait till training camp before I raise the pitchforks on like the vets. And I think I can't remember if it was Jack or someone pointed out, you know, obviously it's disappointing the Mavericks didn't trade some of the vets, but like no one got moved today.
I'm glad. So
it's not just, it's not just the Maverick. Like no one moved any vets today. So presumably there's more dominoes to fall.
All right. So here's what I'm thinking. I want to pivot to talking about, you know, kind of the gap here. I'll just kind of walk everybody through the big picture. But then I'm going to go to Tyler or Jack to actually explain what happened with the 30th pick. Cause I still don't fucking know. And then we can talk about that. Then we can sort of talk about what we think about draft night one as a whole. So obviously the Mavs pick 9th there, and then you know there's a bunch of movement, some silly things happening. We get through about pick 15. The Bulls pick University of Texas's Swain, which was a guy we all really liked. Starting about there, there's a bunch of small trades. And if you want a live shot at Mavs Moneyball Slack, it's 10 people typing messages over and over for about an hour and a half, because at this point we are all questioning why the heck the Mavericks aren't making moves into that portion of the draft. For example, it seemed like, who was it that moved up before Detroit?
The Thunder, they get Sturts.
And Grizzlies made a switch. There's just some like kind of cutesy back and forth moves. The Pistons moved up to take Mavs Moneyball favorite, the guy from Stanford.
Abuka Corey.
That was the guy. I think we're all good pick. Like existentially impressed about.
Yeah, dude. And yeah. Sturts on the Thunder. Like, oh my god. Yeah, they're winning a chip next year, I think, with Mara and Sturts.
They patched a lot of their holes and then fixed and then fixed their salary cap kind of already.
Unbelievable. It's
very, very annoying. So we're all sort of despondent at this point. Then we get to, you're sort of staring at this point in the draft, the only guards left that we were sort of super enthused about collectively were Filon from University of Alabama and Carr from University of Baylor. And Filon ends up with the 76ers, a slide that I think in hindsight may look beyond insane. I'm wondering if we'll find out the reasons why he slid. He's just too good of a player. It's maddening for me that the Mavericks weren't involved here, but I want to get some takes on that from you guys. Then the Lakers traded with the Knicks to pick Carr. And so at that point, I'm just like, I'm losing my mind. So, Brian, where were you at this point in the draft?
I was turning the TV off, man. I was fucking just happy. Like, the Grizzlies felt like, I don't give a fuck if no players got traded, no veteran players. If in your mind you're taking Mraz because you don't believe in like Lively being for sure a part of the future, trade him tonight. That would have been a veteran player that would have actually moved, because he's a player with some promise, a player that a lot of teams in the just outside of the lottery range,
Charlotte would have moved
a pick for. Move him, get a pick. Or if Mraz is your guy and you just stick at 9 and take your guy, I get it. But watching Memphis turn 16 into 5 seconds and a player that probably could have gone at like in that same spot in Kareem Lopez, like, was infuriating.
Excellent work by them.
Such a good,
like, focus. it's why I wouldn't have minded once all the guards were gone, all the top tier point guards, right? Yeah. I wouldn't have minded. I don't know if 12 and 17 was even still on the table at that point. I don't know if 14 and 18 was on the table at that point. But anything you could have done to start to domino adding assets and moving slightly back to still get a really good guy, right? Because that's what I think Mraz is, a really good guy. I would have preferred to watching all of the guards go off the board in two separate stints, all within like four picks of each other. Uh-huh. That was maddening.
Yeah.
Can I, one quick thing, please? I want to add. Yeah. I guess the main reason I'm kind of disappointed with Mraz at 9 is less about what he can actually do on a basketball court, but it's more about the perception of what we're going to have here. So we all agree that Dusty May had very little influence on this draft pick.
Yes.
Yeah. But nonetheless, the optics moving into the summer league and into early next year are that Dusty May and Mraz Johnson Jr. are a package deal that should be viewed together. And with the continuity that they have coming from college to the next level, there's going to be a level of expectation for Mraz to not only be at the level he was at Michigan, but to keep improving, because system familiarity and kind of just the way he plays such a physical brand of basketball. I worry that if Mraz, for whatever reason, starts slow and the minutes aren't necessarily there, I mean, not only is he going to get killed because he was handpicked by Dusty May to join him in Dallas, it's going to look bad on Dusty and fans are going to have a bad kind of opinion of him. So yeah. It's kind of like, it reminds me a lot of like, whether it be high school or college, you never want to hire somebody who went to the school you were at, because you never want to have to, you know, fire the guy who was the campus legend or whatever it may be. It's kind of that situation for me here. I just think that if it works out, great, but you're setting yourself up for a little bit of downside. If it doesn't work, it's not only going to paint the player in a bad light, but also the coach.
I think this is correct. It's an interesting, because I already am getting like text messages from people being like, look at Dusty May's influence. And it's just like, even Mraz is like, I don't think he had anything to do with this. I just think they liked me.
Yeah, you said he got there yesterday. It didn't have much. Like, yeah.
They've been scouting for like a month. Like, this front office has been there for like over a month.
Right.
And they still have plenty of scouts within the organization that they kept that have been scouting for like a year. They didn't go in yesterday like, oh, we want Braden Burries. Dusty May texts him, hey, I'm coming to Dallas. I'm like, oh, shit, we got to go Mraz now. Or else he's not signing here.
Okay. All right. I'm looking at the time on this. I'm going to insert some ads here real quick, and then we'll talk about what happened next. If you want to support the show, very simple. Subscribe. Second, tell your friends. Third, listen to the ads. Fourth, if you're really feeling generous, there's some links which you can literally send me money. I never expect people to do it, but I just have to. I'm saying it anyways. All right. So we'll be right back after we put it in these ads. And we're back. What a fun show. I depending on what happens tomorrow, I may host something else. I might even just kind of host like a Mavs party where people can come talk. And we'll sort of go from there. So if you're looking for more Mavs content, you know, we got a ton of stuff over at Mavs Moneyball right now. We have 4 posts already. Probably by the end of the night, we'll have another 2 or 3. Shout out to Josh has been setting up a laptop, so he hasn't had to edit a single thing. He's very excited about that. All right, so after the Lakers pick, I don't even know what happened. I was kind of in this brain fog where it's just I felt like
10 p.m. and it's just dragging and it's dragging. I'm like, bro, what are we doing?
Like, it was a whole bunch of Spike Lee on the broadcast I was watching, and I'm like, what? I don't want to disrespect a legend here, but I don't care about the Knicks tonight. Can we get back to the draft?
Were you on ABC?
I think I was.
I was on ESPN. The ESPN broadcast is so much more tolerable.
Okay.
Well, yeah, it's I love Legler, so
and it's yeah. Just, it's, yeah. Well, it's my fault for being a casual, so that's sort of where we are. And then we get to, you know, somebody says I'm following along in the Slack, and my computer was at 7% battery, so I was like, I'm gonna go upstairs, and somebody can tell me who drafts. Then all of a sudden, I made a joke where it's like, it'd be very funny if the Mavericks selected Cole Pete, only to get notifications that the Suns are trading. No, it was before this. It was like the Suns are trading into the first round, and it's like, well.
There's only one team.
I went from like zero to like Kirk 100 in terms of like rage, and just like God fucking damn it. We stayed up all night. I was like, Brian asked me if we could go live 45 minutes ago. I told him no. I felt like an asshole for saying that. And then they trade. Then they're sending them away for Cole Pete. Then Mark Stein sends out that they're getting the 47th pick. And a couple other seconds, and I just
I was heated. I'm like, you did not just do this dumb shit. I was heated.
I was so mad. And then Tyler hops in here, and he's all like kind of happy. And I'm like, what's happening? And he's like, oh yeah,
I saw the Shams tweet. And I was like, what?
Well, the Shams tweets. The poor man and his interesting use of the English language resulted in 3 different tweet and deletes, which hasn't happened in some time. Shout out to my wife for bringing me a cocktail because apparently I need it. So then they selected the Mavericks somehow ended up, and I want
you want me to read off the Shams tweet, and I'll try to word
please,
it.
Please do.
Okay.
And explain it to everyone.
So the Dallas Mavericks moved up technically from pick 30 to pick 25 with the New York Knicks and gave up 2 future second round picks. I don't know what these seconds are. It's not been revealed yet.
We all think that the Mavericks didn't even have second rounders, but they must have gotten some from the Washington
AD trade. And then at 30, the Knicks then traded with the Suns to grab 3 more second round picks. So okay. All in all, the Mavericks get Sergio De La Rea, the Suns get Koa Pete, and the Knicks get 5 second round picks and cash considerations.
Which the Knicks are trying
for, and they got cash from the Lakers.
Yeah, from the Lakers. Yeah.
And the Knicks are you know, if you followed they're staring at the second apron, so they're trying to get cute, which I don't blame them. Like they want to keep their team.
They were going to always trade that pick.
Yeah. Yeah, there was something there, and so we end up with a player. I got to punt to Tyler first.
Yeah, this is Tyler's bag right here.
Tyler,
him get in his bag right here.
And before Tyler starts, I got to tell you guys this. Like, this is sort of how I envisioned our draft coverage, where I'm like, look, I'm going to hire some guys that are interested in bringing Mavs, you know, just who watch college, who love this process, because the draft is a lot of fun. It's why I hated that the Mavs didn't care about it for like a decade. And so I brought, you know, but Tyler, Brian, Jack, and a couple other folks on that just are very opinionated of this. And so we write all these draft profiles. You know, Brian wrote 1,700 words on Mikael Brown. I loved reading it. You should still go read it if you haven't had a chance yet. I'm going to be sad about Mikael for a long time. Tyler pops in one afternoon. He's like, so I wrote a profile about some guy, Sergio De La Rea. Is that how we say the man's name? All right. So go from there, because this felt like an NBA 2K player.
Sergio De La Rea, 6'6 guard, barefoot, out of Valencia Basket in Spain. He is of Spanish descent. Born December 2005, so we're looking at a roughly 20-year-old here. Just turned 20 and a half. He'll be 21 in December. Has been running around with the Valencia kind of junior league team, Spanish national team, played on their junior team. And basically, he's kind of worked his way up now to where he's 20. He played on the Spanish national team in the 2024 Olympics when he was, that would have been, what, 19, 18? So he's been on Spanish senior national team since then. And he's played for Valencia on their senior team since 2023. So he's one of those, you remember, like, Luka kind of was ingrained in Real Madrid for, you know, several years when he moved over there at, like, age 13 or 14. Mm-hmm. Sergio De La Rea kind of got ingrained with Valencia at, like, age 16, 17, things like that. So this is a player that I actually kind of fell in love with during this process. I mean, during this year, and he is currently not in America because his team is up 2-1 in the ACB Finals over there in the EuroLeague. It's actually Spanish La Liga is what they are playing in right now. And during this season, he's shooting 39% from three on 47% attempt rate from 3-point range. So he gets them up. He shoots them pretty well. And honestly, I think there's room to improve. You kind of look at the shot. There's some footwork things he can clean up, just some technical type of thing that he can clean up a little bit. But really the thing you're after here is the size, and he's got a really nice feel for the game passing-wise. In my article, I kind of comped him to taller Ricky Rubio with a little bit less of a passing flair, but a much more consistent shot. And I stand by that. He's 6'6". He's not maybe the flashiest passer in the world, but he gets it done, doesn't turn it over a ton, and he's a consistent shooter from deep with room to improve. So you pair that. You know, I saw a lot of people saying, you know, they drafted decaf Luka, things like that. I don't think that's fair to him. I think you're looking at more of a guy who borderline kind of fifth starter, won't ever be a star, but can be a star in his role type of player.
Like,
but
more like a Bogdanovich type, like that type of build.
Yeah, more like a Bogdanovich, but less of a shooting guard and more of an on-ball type of guard, if that makes sense.
Which I'm not alone in this. But I have been, like, kind of very frustrated with about the Mavericks. Because it's like, my goal for next year, personally, is watchable basketball. And a guard that is not Lilliputian is a big step for me. 6'6", without shoes, is a large man. So this is two players that are slightly above positional norms.
That's Mike Schmitz right there.
Mike Schmitz right there. So I'm into it from a concept. And very selfishly, this makes Summer League a lot more interesting because Morez, like, ain't going to get the ball. They'll all play because the NBA really pushes it.
Well, Sergio's still playing overseas. Won't play in Summer League.
He played yesterday. Shit.
Yeah, he has a game, like, in a day or two.
Okay.
Game 4 of their series.
And more importantly, to your point about what it would affect the Summer League, what if I told you he can't, like, actually dribble in front of NBA defenders yet?
Okay, tell me why. Walk me through it. What are you thinking?
He doesn't have the handle for that yet. It's part of the thinking of why I wanted Sergio. Like, I think on my personal board, I had him, like, somewhere around 25, like, for the Mavs specifically.
Okay.
So where we got him is fine. Solid value. I think he's going to be a solid player. I think he's got some really good traits, some things to like that are really going to add. He's going to have, like, a really nice skill set that's kind of missing to his roster. The problem is we don't know if he can actually withstand, like, NBA caliber defenders, like, digging at his handle just yet. Now, he, like Tyler said, is a much more consistent shooter than a lot of guys out of his size. So he'll be able to make a living as, like, a smaller wing, right, early on, until we know for sure that he can actually, like, be an on-ball guy. And I think eventually he will be. I don't know when it'll be. But the problem is, okay, if he's not actually an on-ball guy, if we know Morez can't do that, even though he's, like, a decent connecting passer and, like, a good roller and offensive rebounder, I still have like serious questions about. It's cool that like Merez and Coop and potentially Lively is going to be an awesome defensive front court. Hey, what the fuck are you guys doing on the other side of the ball? How is this going to be watchable?
I have a
How
is this going to be feasible?
This. Well, let's hear it, Jack.
I think they're going to commit forward to Coop at point guard next year.
And I fucking hate
that. I think they're going to make him the full-time point guard. Like, he's dribbling the ball up every possession.
God, that is
because they're clearly – everything they're doing is Coop is the point guard. We were going to get guys around that. But and I want Coop on ball as much as possible, but I don't want him in hellish offensive conditions.
Point guard? Nah, man.
Sure.
No.
And my problem isn't that he's a point guard. My problem is that they have like still have no shooting. Like Merez, I think Merez is going to be at least have a kind of a shot in the NBA. He shot good from the free throw line. His mechanics aren't like awful.
They're slow.
But he's probably not shooting. Terrible. He's not shooting year one, I don't think.
Yeah, I mean, eventually he'll shoot. Kyrie is going to be that. Kyrie Irving is 34 years old.
No, and I need to point that. Asathon asked this because I think it's a regular thing. And I want people that understand and listen to us to know that, like, we value and appreciate Kyrie. We collectively think relying on Kyrie is insane.
Yeah, he's like, 34 off an ACL. Like, and I think Kyrie, Kyrie's also not that on ball. Even a couple years ago, he wasn't that on ball. No. He was mainly a shooting guard.
An All-NBA guy, he wasn't on ball all the time.
And then
we were begging him to be on ball more.
Yeah, and in the fourth quarter, he'd go on ball. But yeah, I think Kyrie next year, I think Kyrie's more of like a shooting guard at this stage in his career, where his game, his value is his shooting ability, not his creation. But
David, you can join. You have the link if you're. Oh, you're at a hotel. David saw a baseball game tonight. Yeah. I don't know if he can.
He was hanging out with the Tartan Army folks down there in Miami.
David was on the Jumbotron of the Marlins game like four times because there's no one else there.
I will say this though, I do think even if De La Rea is not immediately an on-ball guard, kind of in the way that we talked about Okori being a nice change of pace off Cade, being able to kind of attack, close out, get downhill, he's not going to start for this team. Don't get me wrong. But in terms of a second unit, maybe 12 to 15 minutes a game, I think there are certain chances where if you ask him to be a secondary playmaker with maybe initiating some pick and rolls and just letting him kind of do stuff that he's already accustomed to doing, you can kind of get by without him necessarily having to, you know, dribble the ball up the floor 35 times a game, right? Yeah. So I do think there are ways to where you can ease him in. I don't think it's going to be a full red shirt year, but he's not going to be, you know, a starter or playing 25 minutes for this team if all goes according to plan. Okay. Not right away, at least.
Okay. Josh, do you have any questions? Because you're silent and I'm talking too much.
No. I'm just trying to figure out, like, I don't know enough about this guy, but I like the pick and I like the upside play. In terms of everyone asking, like, yeah, next season potentially might look awful, but also they're not supposed to win the championship next season. They are resetting the organization around Cooper Flagg. Like, the only way I think next season starts off with a sour note is, again, if we open up training camp and Gafford and PJ and Clay and all those guys are there. If they can start moving away from that, and yeah, maybe they don't get a credible guard and maybe that makes next season suck more than it should. I don't think that's the worst thing in the world. Obviously it'd be great if they could get a guard. But yeah, I kind of need to wait a little bit, but I like the move. I like them being able to go back up. It's obviously what they needed to do. It's not a pure guard, but at least it's some theoretical playmaking and shooting.
The shooting's real.
And, you know, I do think, you know, if it does turn out where he's taller Ricky Rubio with a better shot and just a little bit worse passing feel, even that, I mean, Ricky Rubio averaged 7 assists in the NBA. If Taylor Rea is averaging 4 to 5, I think you've done really well here.
So Christian Clark got this quote from Mavericks GM Mike Schmitz. You have to be ready for everything with the NBA draft. We went in according to plan, and we were able to execute the plan and the vision that we had in place. So obviously the Mavericks aren't going to come out and say that they think they had a shitty draft. Like, that's just not how any of this ever works. I do believe that. I believe that the Mavericks executed what they want. Where I am running into problems,
that's what I would have wanted.
See, and that, and I'm just like, I'm running into
a plan. It's just not the plan that I would have thought out.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, that's why there are times like I have a really sweet take still on my Twitter where I'm like, trade Jalen Brunson after like one of the shitty 17 footers that he bricked on a night before he was really crisp. And like people always retweet that and throw it in my face now. Whenever it was a good game, it's a good time. And so I've tried to be a little more measured in my words and understanding on these like draft night stuff, we can always be a little over our skis because we don't know what they're building. I just have a hard time because if you as a organization don't particularly want PJ and Daniel Gafford, why on earth would anyone else? And so at that point, you have to sell at a loss. You're not necessarily winning the optics of trades with these veterans. And you have to conceptually grasp that. Jack's point about the fact that nobody got moved tonight is a very important one, and I need to take that to heart. I'm still pissed because I don't value free agency as a way to build teams. There's no one. And we're going to lose Chris Middleton for nothing. He's not getting signed, in my opinion, as of right now.
He's going to Miami on a minimum.
Yeah, he's going to go to Miami on a minimum, which means that asset which the previous regime held on to.
We could have had Cam Boozer.
And fucked the Mavs in the draft again. Just sort of exists. And guys, I get it. I know people don't. We have a whole bunch of fans that are like, the past is the past. You got to move on. And I'm like, I can't do it.
You paid for your sins tonight.
Yeah.
I know, but it's
like if they don't win those games.
It's not just those games, though, because, you know, DLLS, Kevin, my guy Kevin there, has been talking about the atonement tour for Patrick Dumont. And atonement is an excellent word because atonement is not an apology because we will never fucking accept a Patrick Dumont apology for the fuck up that he enabled. Atonement is a better word of it, but atonement still doesn't really seal the gap. We're in a better place than I ever could have imagined in April of 2025. Like, absolutely serious. But now I'm just like, my standards have been raised, right? And so I'm a little alarmed, and I want to say that I'm alarmed without saying I think that the sky is falling. Josh, what are you thinking? I can see you got a take on your face.
No, I mean, I'm just trying to balance the hot takery with like, there's still a whole free agency in summer of moves to be made. Cause I feel like, yeah, like what you're saying isn't necessarily, I don't disagree with what you're saying. But it's one of those things where it's like, do we get mad now? And then on July 15th, PJ and Gafford are gone and they've reshaped the roster and they brought in a guard that's more suitable than something like, you know, that can give Kyrie some help. That's not just like Brandon Williams. There's still potentially a path here. But I don't necessarily disagree with what you're saying. So I'm kind of hedging my bets. I'm just kind of hedging my bets here and waiting, which is awful for a podcast because we want to have the hot takeaway here. But it's just, I don't know. I want to give this new front office a chance to prove itself. And I don't think tonight was necessarily bad. They got a player at nine that I think most people agree was decent enough value, not great. And then they traded up from 30 to get a player that I think most people are okay with at that spot and a good enough trade that fills somewhat of a position of need. So, you know, we'll see. If the worst thing that they did tonight was that they didn't, you know, trade up for Filon, we'll see what happens there, or that they couldn't trade their vets. You know, I think those are moves that could be correctable in about a month.
Brian,
I don't know.
What are you thinking? Because you also have the look of a man with a take.
Yo, at what point do we get to win?
Yeah.
We've been waiting.
It might be a while. It might be a while. It's going to take a while.
We've been waiting through shit for a year and a half. I'm out of patience, man. When do we get like a win? A real solid win? That's what tonight has been building towards. That's what we've been waiting for a month. When we, maybe not the team, but we knew that this season was going south 4 to 5 months ago. And we'd be like, hey, you need to be preparing for the draft. You need to be preparing to try and reorient this team fully around Cooper and shed the old skin of these guys who shouldn't be on the roster anymore. That's what you need to be preparing for. Not how quickly can we dump AD's contract, which I wanted, you know, and we eventually got it. So it's whatever. But okay, we've got this guy, we're bringing in this vet, we're keeping Chris Middleton, we're holding him for some reason. Whatever happened, that's whatever. It's worth getting mad about, but not right now. Like, we sat through that. We sat through the lottery. We sat through everybody throwing every bad player or mid player that they wanted on us in their mock drafts or whatever. And it was fine. It's whatever. Cause I'm like, we just hired Masai. Now we got Dusty Day for the draft. We have like really good foundation in place. We're going to go into the draft and we're going to get a player that in this really, really deep draft, I'm really, really going to like at a spot that I'm going to like. And then we're going to try and do something and see if we can move up and get another player that I like, hopefully. And that's kind of what happened, but it's also not really what happened. And now we're still kind of stuck with the vets for the time being.
Jack?
I mean, it's just I'm worried that they're not going to trade the vets this summer. It's like I'm worried that Masai is going to love these guys. I mean, they fit. They're exactly Masai guys. PJ is a Masai player. Gafford, I know Gafford's a center, but like, it's in my opinion, it's just kind of bad process if you're going to draft Merez to trade PJ. Like PJ is fine at the four. Why draft Merez, who is probably not going to be as good as PJ right away, who can't shoot at all, to play the four? What I wanted in this draft was for them to start moving towards a modern style of basketball. Like, and you talked about this earlier, Kirk, when you talked about the champions and how we keep getting these new champions. And yeah, obviously, like, you know, you can't copy what the Knicks do because there's not another OG Anunoby out there. There just isn't. There's not a Nikola Jokic. There's not a Shea that you're just going to find. But some of the through lines over the last 3 to 4 years has been ball handling, just having as much ball handling throughout your roster, not having it all be on one player, having as much shooting as possible, versatility. And the Mavs aren't building towards this. They don't have a stretch five. They don't have anyone that can even think about shooting a three at the five. They're continuing to build towards a lack of shooting and a lack of offensive skill. I was really hoping that we could start moving towards a different style of play, because I think Cooper needs that type of style. He needs shooters around him. That's how you're going to get the best out of him. Instead, it's probably going to be another year where he's going to be settling for a ton of mid-range jumpers, and he's going to be settling, you know, having to shoot a ton of floaters. And he probably will shoot more threes this year because he's going to have to, but it's not going to be, you know, good in rhythm threes. It's going to be him chucking up bad ones because the paint is clogged because you got Derek Lively and Merez out there. So in a vacuum, the Merez pick is fine, and what they've done this offseason is fine. But I'm yet to see the vision towards winning basketball anytime soon. And like, they have decent players on this roster. The vets aren't terrible. They are good, but none of them make sense at all. And you know, that was the thing with Burries, was you don't have anyone on the roster like him. And he is that type of like modern NBA wing, even if, you know, his ceiling isn't that high. Like, he can shoot, he can dribble, he can defend. So again, I just leave the draft just kind of feeling like we're going to continue to have to wait to see what this is going to look like. And I was really hoping we're going to leave the draft with like a clear direction. And instead, I still feel like this franchise is rudderless right now.
Oh, Tyler, where you at?
Well, and it's, you know, I was going to kind of preface it by asking if you guys had a letter grade you'd give the night. If I was going to, like, assign the night a letter grade, I'd give it, like, a B-C+ for a lot of what Jack said. Like, it was fine. Merez is a fine pick. He's probably going to be a really good pro. Mm-hmm. But when you think of realigning this thing around Cooper Flagg, the first thing you think of is guard play. They need guard play. And that's why I think Burries became a really attractive option to a lot of fans. You know, he was easily projectable, something that Merez, like, when I wrote up the profile, I found a hard time finding, like, honest to goodness, really good comps that I felt good about in the NBA, because a lot of what Merez does is off the box score. And, like, I feel I didn't comp him to Draymond Green because I don't think Draymond Green is a replicable player.
He's a one-of-one. Sense.
He's one-of-one. And, you know, if Merez is like Draymond Light, it's like, yeah, you've probably done pretty good. But at the same time, when you look up and Braden Burry's in year three, he's going to be, you know, 17 points a game on 42% from three, averaging a steal and a half a game. You're going to run back to all these scenarios in the draft where you're like, first regime or first chance this new kind of administration with the Mavericks has had a chance to put their stamp on a team around Cooper Flagg. And they chose to punt on taking one of the guards that was thought to be in that higher tier in order to take a guy that, like it or not, is going to be seen as Dusty's guy. And so it's just going to be a tough optical thing to fight. They have to be, and granted, we've talked about it, this roster is far from complete.
Yep.
But I just leave tonight feeling underwhelmed because I was, like many fans, thinking we were going to end the night with a guard I felt good about plugging into the starting lineup, and we just did not. So for me, that's why, you know, I said it a lot during, you know, in the Slack, I'll use more polite language here. I thought it was a failure of sorts. That's why I can only give it a B minus C plus, because the objective I wanted them to accomplish at the beginning of the night, they did not do.
Like, sure. I have a question for everybody up here. Like, the Mavs' biggest needs, did they solve any of them tonight?
No.
That's so. What this is the best pick you're going to have in the Cooper Flagg era. And
well, you,
and like, I understand that this specific team isn't going to win, but it's just, I don't know.
Well, I mean, that gets back to the more of like what were the Mavericks doing institutionally where they were not able, and this is the previous front office, where they were not able to sell Patrick Dumont. You know, I one longtime friend of the show, a different Tyler, said to me, like, this all comes back to the fact that you didn't fire Nico Harrison in February of 2025. And I think there are elements of that, but it's like fan bases don't want to continually hear the excuse making. Like, it's not how people operate. It's not how those who still tune in watch. And I get that. And I don't want to tell people how to feel on this. I think where we are right now, I said this before the draft, and I think this is important once again to say out loud. Compared to April 2025 and now June 2026, the outcome of where we are, Cooper Flagg, Masai Ujiri, Mike Schmitz, Dusty May, pretty fucking rad from a big picture perspective. Yep. The issue that we're running into is that like the thing that we feared the most, the longest term fear, which was like very evident by around game three of the previous season, that the Mavericks were not, you know,
game
where they
were against the Washington Wizards.
Yeah. Keyshawn,
I went to that game in a torrential downpour. It was like, it was a hurricane in Dallas that night. And I went to that game and I was in the third quarter. I was like, oh my God, this is going to be an awful season.
It's and it was the evisceration of Anthony Davis by the assassin Victor Wembanyama on game one of the regular season. It's just like, we all knew. And like, this is the real thing with sports, particularly by now. Like, I gotta say this to people who are listening, who don't watch every game. I watch 75 to 82 Dallas Mavericks games a year. I think some people quit out on it. And when you quit out on it, it's easier to look and say, oh, well, they can fix this and this and this. Some of the things are just not fixable because it's not how the NBA works now. So it's like you can see sort of the challenges with this team. And when you say that, all right, these are the challenges and they didn't fix any of them on draft night, that kind of hurts.
Can I add one?
Sure, and sure.
I like what you said, Kirk. When you go back to April of 2025 to now, this feels like a rousing success. Because But when you sit in our chairs, and we watched a lot of terrible basketball last year, when you go back to February 15th, 2026 to now, this feels like one of the bottom 10% outcomes.
They were like inner circle track to six.
We've been angling for this night for 4.5 months.
And that part's true. But that has like what happened tonight, I think, is a pretty good outcome considering, compared to what happened in the lottery, which was bad, compared to what happened in the coin flip, which was bad, compared to what happened in the last night of the regular season, which was bad. Like, those things were bad. But tonight, in and of itself, so going in and executing a vision with pick 9, I'm not unhappy. I'm just sort of institutionally frustrated because, you know, I got a lot of people that are telling me out there, oh, there are different ways you can build a team. No. Like, no. You build through the draft. You build through the draft. Yeah. What the Knicks did is unrepeatable. It is. It's amazing. The Thunder, the Spurs, like even, you know, the, look at the other joke, the Celtics, draft. So it's like, that's just, it's frustrating. It doesn't mean I don't think the Mavericks can win. And that somebody in the chat, I think it was Aaron Hall here, being like, hey, y'all got Cooper Flagg, which is like, yes. Like, that's the,
don't fucking say that. That is what makes me the most irate.
Yeah.
That is what makes me the most irate. Because you know who else said, hey, we have Cooper Flagg? Them. That's why we drafted fucking Sergio De La Rea instead of a real guard. We need somebody to dribble. We have Cooper Flagg. We need someone to shoot. We have Cooper Flagg. We need someone to rebound. We have Cooper Flagg. That's how you end up with Cooper Flagg in fucking Boston in 6 years.
Well, Josh was privy to this, like, during the early Luka years with me.
Where it's what they did with Luka.
Right.
Like, it was the whole.
God, that is so
frustrating. We got Luka. It's fine.
Yeah.
Look at where we are now. Like, you can't. Like, I am higher on Cooper Flagg than maybe anybody in the world. But he is not. There is no basketball player that can single-handedly overcome everything.
Right.
And, you know, they at some point, I'm just annoyed hearing all this. We're building around Cooper Flagg. We're building around Cooper Flagg. It's the future. And then I'm not seeing the results of that.
We're not building around Cooper Flagg right now. We're building on top of him. We are asking him to prop all of this up in a way that is untenable.
With a lot of redundant skills,
Brian.
Others already did.
Brian, yes, that's a great fucking take. That if your rage is really channeled, there's this website called.
Now, that's a headline right there. The man building on top of Cooper Flagg.
Oh my god, just a banger! Because here's the thing, like, and y'all are gonna love, like, and look, you know, I ain't here to kick some of our media, like, the actual media people, but there are three different. Like Dallas Morning News adjacent people that made Nate Ament based jokes today on Twitter, and I wanted to stab them with spoons. So I'm like, you guys,
Brad Townsend tweet. Oh,
not funny, Brad.
You're the volunteer.
And then Eddie Sefko did it too, and I'm like you're at the old folks. You're like you're at the Mavericks media old folks home. It's like sharing shit like that is awesome. So mad, Josh. What, you've been silent for a while. You got any thoughts?
No, it's just I'm seeing a lot of me from 2019 in the takes tonight, which is kind of bringing a tear to my eye and making me happy for the next generation. I think everyone should be, if you want to be mad, you should be mad. Like, I'm not going to tell people not to be mad. I'm actually glad. Like, don't be me. Like, don't be dead to the world and be like, oh, everything's going to be fine. Like, that's not fun. Like, it's fun to get emotional about it and feel passionate about it. I guess my thing is I just have to, I can't be like, they're just going to let Cooper do it all and not worry about it. When this front office just got restructured, they just got a new coach. Like, all of this is a month old, 2 months old.
Right.
Like, I just, sure. I need to see this summer. And if this summer is bad and they don't pick a lane and they kind of waffle and they keep Gafford and PJ and they're like, we like Merez coming off the bench and learning through these vets, then it's like, okay, like, what are we, you know, what are we doing here? Absolutely. I need to see what this front office, how they want to maneuver this summer before I can really give a hard opinion on it. But I do agree with you all. Like, they have to pick a lane. And that's why I figured, you know, getting rid of Nico, hiring Schmitz, an outside person as the GM, hiring a coach that's not, you know, associated even in the NBA before now, getting rid of Jason Kidd. Like, they are clearing the deck, obviously, of the old regime. That I have to feel like the logic means that includes the players too. If it doesn't, then that's going to be weird and awkward, and we can get the pitchforks out and we can, you know, we can raid downtown Dallas or in for 4 years, we can raid, you know, Addison or wherever we have to go after that.
So Marlo in the chat says the Mavs can trade for vets and picks and have cap space. They will be good guard. There will be good guards that will be available in the next couple of years.
How are you acquiring them is my question.
Oh,
How are you acquiring these guards? You don't have picks.
Well, but that comes as a matter of like being a way station for things. And like that's where my David Sanchez is here. He must have powered up his phone. I'm gonna bring him on. That it's not letting me out. Oh, there he is. That must mean to me that what's ended up happening is that our GM in front office is actually willing to lose a battle to win the war. And like that's what I didn't like about Masai up in the Raptors is it felt like every trade that they made had to be one that they won right then. And I don't like that's just not where Dallas is. Dallas doesn't need to win next year. They need to show growth. Those are different things. David, welcome to the show. What's happening, brother?
I'm hearing a lot of negativity.
Yeah. Give me some positivity. Yeah, I was being the positive one. That's bullshit. That's not my job.
I'm with Josh on this. I mean, let's give it a little. Let's give it a little time. I love Morez. Like he's a dog. Like I want dogs on my team. And like I know I'm not. You know he's not perfect for the team. But like if you tell me you have Cooper Flagg and Morez Johnson, and you're going to try to build a team around that. And like, you know, 71% from the star drill, he does shoot. I don't know if anybody's going to pick somebody up and it's going to be their coach. I think that, I mean, like he knows more about him than anybody else. And when he talked about how he could change his defensive strategy at Michigan all around Morez, because he was someone that could, you know, take someone at the point of attack. He could defend back. Like, I'm really excited about the pick, and you know I don't know about you know plus size Ricky Rubio for Sergio De La Rea. Ricky Rubio was like one of one in Spanish league. He was a child playing on the national team, and
he was like just barely sub All Star level, like at his peak in the NBA. Like Ricky Rubio was a really really good player.
Yeah, but you know I come out with like a B because I believe in a lot of stuff that like Brian and Tyler and Jack are saying, like, super there. But, like, I really want to be excited about this. Like, you know, I don't go to Summer League because I'm not going to Summer League for the first time because, you know, I'm not excited. You know, I'm really excited about what we have with Cooper. And, like, let's have some young players there and, like, develop. And hopefully, like Josh was saying, like, we can actually give this a little bit of time and hopefully get something in return. Maybe there just wasn't a return for the players that we wanted or the positions or the draft picks that we wanted yet. Like we're not privy to that. So I'm gonna give them a little bit of time. So that's where my positivity comes from. All in on Morez.
It is objectively hilarious that I'm not the shit heel for once. Like that is
that's why you brought me on.
No, well, maybe. I mean, we have a wide variety of folks. Like I'm in discussions with former contributor Dalton Trigg, because he's like, I really want to write somewhere again. And I was like, well, maybe Dalton, can you get along with the grumpiest fuckers in the universe? Because I've got them on staff already. Well, this has been fun. And obviously tomorrow is a whole new day. I think I'm just going to kind of end on
this. Yeah, I mean, I'm mad tonight and I'm frustrated, whatever, but overall, it could have been a lot worse, and they could have taken Nate Amon, and I would have been 10 times more angry. Mm-hmm. And I think my frustration is I just want to see this team get changed and like heavily changed. And I'm just impatient about that. That's where my frustration comes from. But, you know, if they can, if they do that over the course of the summer, then I'm going to be super happy, but I'm just impatient. So,
well, but we say the course of the summer, we and this is the part I want to end on. The course of the summer is July 10th. Maybe. Okay. We all live in this post LeBron James world where way back when he held the NBA in limbo for 2 weeks before he went to Cleveland. And that was one of the more amazing times to be an NBA fan. But most stuff is, we all understand now, most stuff is done by the time free agency kicks off. Mm-hmm. So it's like realistically, and I don't remember what day, it might be Monday. I think it's probably like either Monday, the July 6th or the 7th, July 7th, something
6th
like that.
6th is the new league year.
Okay.
But so I think the Momentarium starts next Tuesday.
Something that right. So it's the same. It's all the same, but it's like it's everybody like agreeing that everything like it's like the purge where like all everything is like everything is legal, though it's not. It's very odd. The NBA is very stupid this way. So it's just like all this stuff is gonna be done, and for people being like, oh, we have the summer to fix this, and I'm just like, I'm sitting there going, the what? No, we don't. Like Derek Jones Jr. was
by the time we're done in Vegas.
That's right.
Yeah. And like summer not, league, like after summer league, the NBA is just kind of done until like October.
And that's honestly, and I'm not complaining about that. I kind of like that. There's finality involved here. I just want everybody to know, like this stuff happens. It's, like we're gonna know. Like we're gonna know. And like that part is this the section that I don't know, sort of settle on. We're an hour. Didn't mean to go for an hour. Thank you for taking so much of your time hanging out with me. I don't know what I'm going to do tomorrow night. I don't want to clog people's feeds. Nothing. I don't know how you guys feel. I listen to podcasts pretty regularly. And mm-hmm. one of the things as I've gotten older, like I get mad when I see like and again, I like these people, but like when it's like a Zach Lowe 2 hour and 21 minute podcast, I'm like, brother, what are you talking about for 2 hours and 21 minutes? I ain't got all time for that. So it's like, I don't want to do that to people, but I will say, I we talk so much, we might as well record it and share it with people because folks want to listen. So maybe check back in on the pod, subscribe, all that stuff. We'll see where things go. Definitely head over to Mavs Moneyball. I think Jack Bonin is riding on our guy in the middle of the night. Our new Dallas Mavericks draft pick from pick 9, Morris Johnson, and we'll see where we go from there. Everybody be good. Thanks so much, and go Mavs.
Stay positive, kids.